Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 30 of A Year-Long Conversation. Today, we're going to be talking about, can Donald Trump really win? I mean, seriously, does he really have a shot? Joining me, as always, is Blue in Alabama's Michael. Michael, we had a riveting Democratic convention. Did you enjoy that?
I did. I thought it was a really good convention. You know, if we could just ban all the Bernie supporters.
Well, you know, according to Fox News, they rioted and caused a fire, and I'm surprised that we didn't see any of that on television, them, you know, basically wrecking the place and booing all the speakers. I'm surprised we didn't catch any of that.
Yeah, but Fox News is always with the hard-hitting journalism.
Yeah. I mean, really the whole Republican Party, they kept trying to underline it. Marco Rubio, he was on Twitter being like, wow, it's hard to hear Hillary's speech over all these boos. And I'm like, wow, I didn't really see that many boos, you know. Like, I mean, I know there probably were some, but I heard a lot of cheers. If the booing had been louder than the cheers, I think it would have heard it. Where are all those, you know, people booing Hillary, Marco? Were they the same place as your mainstream support to beat Trump? I mean, are they basically in your head? Or a lot of people were talking about the big contrast, because there was a big contrast between the Republican convention and the Democratic convention. I don't want to dwell on it because it's almost, you know, over a week old or whatever, but it did seem like, too, with the Trump convention, which it wasn't really the Republican convention, it was the Trump convention, because most of the big Republican names weren't there, so you can't really call it the Republican convention when none of the Bushes, John Kasich, I know Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan were there, but they looked more like hostages, and they didn't have, it was a very muted endorsement from both of them. But with the Democratic convention, I mean, it was everybody. The first night, Cory Booker, Elizabeth Warren, Michelle Obama, Bernie Sanders, Al Franken, I mean, basically every big name person in the Senate. The next night, Bill Clinton, and the next night, Obama, Joe Biden, Tim Kaine. I mean, it was like Ocean's 11 or something. I mean, it was like everybody in Hollywood you'd want to see. This is what that was for the political world. Everybody in politics that you care to watch and is interesting enough to watch, and the Democratic Party was there. On the RNC, it was more like, don't touch Trump, I'm here. Trump's calling me again, I'm not here, turn off the lights.
And the other big contrast that you really want to look at, you know, with the DNC, everybody was there talking about how great of a job Hillary would be, how great of a job Hillary would do as president.
Right. They
were all there supporting Hillary. Yeah, some of them threw shade at Donald Trump, made fun of Donald Trump, obviously, but they were throwing their support behind Hillary Clinton. At the RNC, it was an anti-Hillary convention. It wasn't pro-Trump. Like, there was nobody coming out talking about how great of a job Donald Trump would do. It was all how scary that a Hillary Clinton presidency would be.
You're right. And one thing I noticed was that at the Republican convention, literally every speaker, almost every speaker, unless they were a blood relative or an employee of Trump's, they got up there like, I might not agree with Trump about everything, but me and Trump are not really that similar. Trump and I, we don't see eye to eye on everything, but he's got my endorsement. Like, they had to basically preface it by saying something about how Trump's imperfect and he's not a perfect. And I didn't hear a lot of that at the Democratic convention. I mean, I didn't hear any of the speakers really be like, Hillary and I, we don't get along, but we got to support her anyway. I didn't hear any of that. Like, it was more full-throated endorsements. Even Bernie, I mean, I know it probably physically pained him to get up there and talk about how great Hillary would be for America, but he did do it, and he didn't seem like a gun was to his head or anything. I mean, he seemed like he was there, and of course, Bernie's fans thought that, you know, somebody's got his dog, and like, they're going to drown it if he doesn't get up there. It looked like he was there with his own free will and supporting Hillary, and I mean, of course, when Hillary was giving her acceptance speech and they kept cutting back to Bernie, he was like blood red, and he looked like he was up there having a silent heart attack, you know. I mean, he's sweating and blood red, and he didn't really smile that much, and he just, you know, those two Muppets and the Muppets that are always sitting up on the balcony, like, criticizing everybody, that's what he looked like up there. But at least for the moment he was on the stage, which is where Bernie likes to be, and he's speaking, which is what he likes to do, he did really go out for her.
Like, that's one thing I will say. Like, I was, as much as we've talked badly about Bernie over the past couple of months and him refusing to drop out, which we were absolutely correct in, but when it came time to come around and endorse, like, he did a really good job of really talking about Hillary and supporting her and trying to get his supporters on board. The problem is him giving them all this hope for so long and then trying to get them on board, they weren't going for it.
Right.
Like, if he would have dropped out when he should have, he would have had a much better argument of pulling them over, getting them on Hillary's side.
I mean, like, if he'd have dropped that in March, I really don't think you would have seen the same level of booze. And because there were some protesters, so let's get into that a little bit. Republicans seem to think that this is going to be a big thing for Hillary, like a bad news for her. I don't really believe that. But at the Democratic convention, it seemed like Bernie's people were a lot more unruly than like the Never Trump movement at the Republican convention. And I think Republicans keep saying that Hillary can't win his voters. They're not going to come around. It's going to be a big problem for her. I don't know that I really believe that, but I do think you have to put some of the blame on Bernie for creating this schism. It really wouldn't exist if it weren't for him. And I really do believe that. Like, I really think if he had dropped that in March or he'd never run, I don't think all this anti-Hillary shit on the liberal side would have, I don't think it would have happened. I don't think that it would have been, because if you presented people with Hillary and Martin O'Malley and Jim Webb and Lincoln Chafee, it would be awfully hard for them to go to the convention and say, we wanted the guy who never ran. We wanted somebody else. We wanted somebody invisible. We wanted our imaginary friend to be the nominee. I don't think they would have shown up and been that adamant, but Bernie kind of gets in the face. And I think that they proved at the convention that it was never even really about Bernie, because even when Bernie was up there and he was like, I support Hillary, boo, shut up, Bernie, sit down, we want Bernie. And I'm like, what? You know, like, they're telling Bernie to shut up and sit down, and they want him at the same time. Even when their candidate wasn't behind them, even when their candidate was being like, guys, we need to move on or whatever. No, shut up. We don't want this, Bernie. We want Bernie from 3 months ago. And I mean, like, they didn't even want him. I really think that you could have put almost anybody in that position Bernie was in, and they would have gotten behind them. I think it was more of a, we're mad as hell, we're just mad and we're angry and we're broke or we're going to have debt or we don't want, you know, like all these things are not going our way, and we need anybody. And it could have been Elizabeth Warren. It could have been Andrew Cuff. I said this a long time ago, like in one of the first couple episodes, that they tried to get Andrew Cuomo when he wouldn't run and Joe Biden wouldn't run and Elizabeth Warren wouldn't run. They kind of all got behind Bernie because that was who was there. And I don't think it was like that they thought Bernie was this awesome candidate. I think it was that he was the only one who showed up to run against Hillary. But if he hadn't run, it's awfully hard to see the far left really getting behind Lincoln Chafee and Jim Webb, both of whom used to be Republicans, and Martin O'Malley. You know, like, it's really hard to see them getting behind those guys. So I think they would have been starved out. And in that case, of those choices and those options, it would have been like, well, Hillary's the best that there is, so we're all going to... I do think you have to blame Bernie for that a little bit. And, I mean, who knows what he thinks? I know half of the Republicans that Trump ran against are really hoping Hillary wins so they can run against her in 2020, because they don't want to have to suffer through 4 years of a Trump president. You know, I think Ted Cruz and John Kasich and Jeb Bush and all these guys, I think they would love to run against Hillary in 2020 instead of having Trump be president for 4 years. So I think they are actively rooting against him at this point. But, I mean, you could almost see the subtext in Rubio's tweets. At least if Hillary wins, he's not totally finished, because he might can come back and beat her in 2020 or whatever. I think that's what Republicans always want. They want Democrats to be in power, and then they take all the blame for everything. Oh, my God, look at this mess. We got to come in and fix this. And I think that the most glaring difference in the conventions, besides the speakers and the endorsements and the tone, because the tones were really different, was the famous Trump line, the now infamous Trump line, I alone can fix it. And I love how... I was watching that on MSNBC. They had this swooping overhead camera, and they pulled back to the big monitor with Trump's face on it. I mean, it looked just like something out of 1984, you know? It looked just like something out of an Orwellian, like, you know, if America has now become a techno-fascist state, I alone can fix it, and his head was the size of the fucking moon, and they were swooping back at these camera angles, and I mean, it looked just like he was about to say, go forth, army, take land from me. I mean, it looked just like he was about to stage a coup or something. And then when Hillary's up on stage, she's like, it's got to be everybody. Obama's behind me. Bill Clinton's behind me. The Bushes are behind me, even though they won't say it out loud. John Kasich and Ted Cruz are probably behind me, even though they won't say it out loud. She just had her first Republican endorsement from a congressman. A Republican congressman came out for Hillary. This is the first time somebody's crossed party lines for an endorsement for president in decades. I mean, been a very long time. And I was reading articles this week where they're now saying, what if Trump quits? Like, and I feel like that's written straight from the desk of Mitch McConnell and like Reince Priebus and like all these guys are being like, what if he quits? What if he quits? I'm throwing these scenarios out there of what happens if Trump quits and all these things. And what happens if he quits right now and then they get somebody else? And yet you'll notice that Trump himself has given absolutely no indication that he's going to quit. that he has any intention of quitting. For somebody to quit, they have to quit. What they're talking about sounds more like firing him, except that that they wanted that he quit. But the articles were like, well, he's got until the first week of September to quit, and they can still get a new candidate. And if it's after the middle of September, it would be too late to get on the ballot in most states. So basically, if he didn't quit by the middle of September, they're stuck with him. And it's like, Trump's only got a month before he can quit. And, you know, Trump's sort of thinking like, what do you mean a month before I can quit? I'm not quitting. You know, like, I mean, what do you send these timetables for?
Yeah.
So I just think that that's interesting that, I mean, it's the first time I've really heard, like, people talk about a nominee quitting before the election and all this. And where do you think that comes from? The Republicans just cannot believe he's their candidate?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe some of it's just wishful thinking, too. You could be right. Or maybe it's them trying to sabotage his chances to make sure that he doesn't have a, that he doesn't win.
At this point, most of the big Republicans want him to lose because they would much rather have 4 years of Hillary and then they can make more congressional gains than they've already done. When they lost to Obama, they were able to sweep House Representatives 2 years later.
Yeah.
6 years later, they were able to get back to Senate. I think they would rather lose the White House to Hillary, and especially because the 2020 census is coming up. What fucked everything up the last time was that they had taken Congress at the, if they had Congress in 2010, they took it back, and that allowed them to redistrict the House of Representatives and basically gerrymander the shit out of those districts, and that's how they were, they've been able to keep the House of Representatives, even though Congress is fantastically unpopular with the American people. I mean, their approval ratings hover slightly above, like, Muammar Gaddafi's sons or something. You know, they're really bad approval ratings. So nobody's really in danger of losing their seats because of the gerrymandering. And so I think they think, well, if Hillary's president for 4 years, we can keep the House of Representatives because that's the way it always goes. It's very hard to take back the House or whatever. And the way it's gone in recent years is that people get so fed up with the current president, like they did with Bush, that they give the House Representatives back to Democrats, which is what happens.
Yeah.
Or if they don't like Obama, and then the Republicans get it back. So I think that they think they would be better as the opposition party than the one really in power. Adopted that mindset, at least until 2020, when they might can get a candidate that they actually like, and then they can keep the House and redistrict it even further. I mean, you're going to see a town with like 10 white families in it that's going to have a House of Representatives, and then the entire city of Atlanta is going to have John Lewis, you know, so that's what you're going to see, basically.
Yeah.
That's how they've been drawing up the maps and stuff. I mean, you, many, many podcasts ago, you pointed out that in Alabama, Terry Sewell's district is outrageous.
Yeah.
They definitely gerrymandered it. They might as well call it the black zone, because that's basically exactly what they did. I think that they do want to lose, and I think that so this brings us really to our main. With Trump, because every fucking day he has a worse day, really.
Yeah.
Every day
there's
something worse, something terrible. When Hillary, she brought out the Muslim soldier that died defending America, she brought out that man's parents. And his parents were talking about Trump. The next day, Trump's like, they're in the Muslim Brotherhood. They're a sleeper cell of the Muslim Brotherhood. They've got ties. And then he did that to somebody else, a totally different person. And it's like, if you're a Muslim that's against Trump, you're part of the Muslim Brotherhood.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see him be like, oh, that Malala girl, she's Taliban, total Taliban. You know, I mean, I can't wait to see him basically accuse her of being part of ISIS or something. So,
yeah.
When it was accepting the nomination, it was like, wow, the Democrats have the first woman president, and the Republicans have a guy who probably punched a pigeon because it shit on his jet, or started a Twitter feud with the moon, or thinks that every Muslim in America is ISIS conspiring against him. Biggest buffoon I've ever seen. Like a nominee for president, and the Democrats have Hillary. It seems like there's no way he could win, but at the same time, you got to be careful thinking that way, because that's so let's get into it. This is our main thing. Can Trump really win? And right now, I think almost everybody in America would say no, but I'm not so sure that he can't. I mean, like, I think Hillary will win. I feel pretty confident about that, but I'm not going to say that he can't win. So I think we got to look at, like, how could he win? What could go wrong? Because if he wins, something's gone very wrong. You know, what do you think? I mean, is there a shot he could win?
Yeah, absolutely. There's absolutely a shot he could win. I mean, if he can hold North Carolina and pull out Ohio, Pennsylvania, I mean, and then one of Wisconsin or Michigan, which is difficult, but it's definitely doable. I mean, and if he could somehow win Florida, like, I mean, I don't think he will, but the last polling data that I showed, she only had like a 4-point lead on him in Florida, thanks to Jill Stein and Gary Johnson. Like when they put him in a 4-person race, she was at like 37%. He was at 33%.
Oh God! First of all, Jill Stein, if she wanted to help, she could leave. Basically, like, yeah. Like she could take a long walk off a short pier. So whenever I come in and I'm like, "No, you got Hillary and Trump. Those are your choices. You don't know if Jill Stein could win." I'm like, "She's not going to. You got Hillary or Trump. That's who's going to become president. You don't know Gary Johnson. He's our. I'm like, "No, you got Hillary and Trump." People keep thinking we need like 3, 4, 5, 6 parties. And I mean, I read an article one time that said the Democrats are the third party you want. Like they are.
Yeah.
People don't ever think about it that way, but they always go, we need a third choice, we need a third choice. Why? What do you believe in? Oh, I think global warming. I'm for abortion and I'm against this and all this stuff. And I'm like, well, you're a Democrat, but you don't want to call yourself a Democrat. And a lot of people that I've really talked to are either, like a lot of libertarians are Republicans. I don't know why they think there's a difference, but they are Republicans. And a lot of Green Party people are Democrats. But they don't want to believe that. And then even if there really is somebody who's truly moderate and truly in the middle and kind of like really could take different stuff from both parties, and then they're talking to me about this, I'm like, well, you sound a lot like me, but I'm a Democrat and I'm a liberal. People like me, I think, became Democrats by default. Growing up, in my lifetime, you've had Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, and Barack Obama. I mean, if you're remotely in the middle, you're a Democrat. I mean, because, and Donald Trump. So, I mean, I was tweeting out, I'm like, you know, Obama's sitting there thinking, like, if you put George Bush before me and Donald Trump after me, Trump's going to be the last white president. I mean, if the last white president is Trump and Bush, there'll never be another white president. After that, it'll be Booker, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it'll go for generations without there being another white president. So for people like me, I mean, the Republican Party offered us nothing. I mean, they offered absolutely nothing. The entire 90s, it was all about how to get nail Bill Clinton for a blowjob. It was all about how to basically give tax breaks to millionaires. It was all about how to stifle gay rights and abortion. But they didn't offer anything. And the Democrats cared about what I cared about, climate crisis and abortion and things like that. So the stuff I'm conservative on is never going to be enough to where I would be a Republican. And unless they did something drastic, it would never change, really. A lot of people like me are Democrats by default. And I think that you're going to enter into that age where the Democratic Party becomes kind of what it was in the LBJ time period, where there's some conservative Democrats, there's some liberal Democrats. I mean, in the 60s, you had George Wallace and Martin Luther King Jr. that were in the same political party. Strom Thurmond and Hubert Humphrey and LBJ and Kennedy. I mean, the Democrat Party was enormous in the 60s. And in the 1930s, yeah, you had the Dixiecrats and FDR. And I think we're entering into that time period where you have people like me who are a little bit more of a moderate Democrat, but not really. People that are even more conservative than I am, Tim Kaine, and then people that are more liberal than I am, like Bernie and stuff. And you're going to have a lot of different kinds of people inside the Democratic Party because Republicans are—they're just not offering people anything. They're not offering real incentive to be in there.
Yeah, unless you're white.
Well, even beyond white, because that sometimes I think is something that Democrats lean too heavy on. Because when I was watching the Democratic convention, it was like, if you're a white male, and I'm like, why is Tim Kaine saying that, you know, like, if you're a white male, you know, and all this stuff. And I'm like, well, why is Al Franken and Tim Kaine and Bill Clinton, why are they saying this, you know? So I think that sometimes they lean too heavy on that, because when we get into what's really driving Trump's base or whatever, that is some of it. So just like I became a Democrat by default, some people are becoming Republicans by default because of a little bit political correctness and a little bit just like, I don't know if you call it resentment. I don't know what you call it. But like for this last week, I saw a story where Matt Damon was in a movie that filmed in China, and he's going to be in this movie in China, and an actress said, oh, he shouldn't be in that movie. That's whitewashing. Now, his role is white. He's supposed to be a white guy. He's not trying to play Asian. He's not pulling a Marlon Brando.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be a white guy. But he's basically saying, well, most of the actors are Chinese, but Matt Damon is also in this movie, and it's going to be big. It's going to give American and Chinese distribution. It's going to be kind of the first big crossover hit for China. And a lot of Asian people in America are complaining about that. Really? Matt Damon's the problem? Like to most people in like middle America, Matt Damon's a communist. I heard people in Alabama be like, I like those Jason Bourne movies, but I wish they'd get somebody that wasn't a fucking communist to be in them. You can make people Republicans by default by really going after that and really kind of hammering that home and really, and this is something that Hillary and Obama have never done. This is why people like Hillary and Obama. People look at Obama and they can see anything they want to see. I mean, I feel like Obama's been great at really bringing people together and really kind of doing that. Hillary did the same thing. The Democratic Convention was beautiful. I mean, they tried to include every... I looked at the roll call sheet for the Democratic Convention, and they're like, okay, at 3 o'clock, we're going to have gay, Muslim, transgender people who like to eat sandwiches over the... I mean, it was the most specific minorities. I didn't even know there were people that were in these groups, basically. It was like, yeah, are you an Italian Eskimo married to a Brazilian transgender person? Well, we've got a speaker at 2:30 that's going to be for you. I mean, it was the most specific minority. Groups, but the Democratic Party tried to do a really good job of including everybody. And I think this is part of Hillary and Obama, what they do really well. But I think there are people that, I don't know what their real game is, but every time you get on Salon.com or Hello Giggles, think about that for a blog, Hello Giggles. But every time you look at these kind of websites or whatever, I think they are driving people to Trump. And I think it's because they're basically trying to drive divisions where they, like me, if somebody says, well, Black Lives Matter and black people being shot by the cops is wrong and Muslims shouldn't be discriminated against and these things like this, they're absolutely right. But then when you go further than that and say, there's no place for you in the Democratic Party as a white male, and I think that that's where some of it is coming from. I don't think that, like, people that are actually in charge of the Democratic Party are doing that, but some of the activist voices are doing it. And I think that that's driving some support to Trump a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think, like, when we get into where is Trump's support coming from, because it doesn't look like he has any support at this point. It's just, it's so weird, because every time you see somebody, they're denouncing Trump, nobody seems to like him, and then every day he's in some new scandal. I mean, it's just some new fuck-up in, like, the course of a week. Time period. He said that the Muslim ex-soldier's family was part of the Muslim Brotherhood. You pointed out something that he gave a disastrous interview about national security.
Yeah, he got a national security briefing, and in a one-hour briefing, he asked three times why we couldn't use nuclear weapons. He basically said, if we have them, why can't we use them?
So right there, right off the bat, you know, all the generals that spoke at the Republican convention were like, oh, God, I wish we could have that last 2 weeks back. You know, the Republican convention was very, very pro-military. I noticed that, too. That was a very big... It was funny because a lot of Republicans criticized the Democrats for having the mothers of the black men that have been shot by cops, having, like, those seven women come out and speak. But the Republican convention, they did the same thing, but it was for the mothers of troops that had been killed. And they had that one guy who was a Benghazi contractor that died, and his mother came out and spoke against Hillary. And they both used parents to an extent. They both used dead kids and, like, grieving parents and things like that. One used it for black people in America who were getting killed. The other used it for overseas troops. But the whole convention seemed to be centered around troops, even though Trump has never done shit for the troops. Like, I mean, he's never done, even when he had that event, he skipped that debate to avoid Megyn Kelly because she was too tough for him.
Yeah.
And he skipped the debate with Megyn Kelly, and he had that troop event that was supposed to raise money for the troops, and they saw that none of the money actually went to the troops. You know, I was skeptical at first when people kept comparing Trump to Hitler, and I don't think he's Hitler, but the fascist tendencies come in whenever it's the troops, the troops, the troops, military, 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 but he's just using them. Like, he doesn't care about soldiers' lives. Like, to them, the military is like a chess piece. It's like a piece on a board he can move around. The fucking president of Brazil, he talked shit about me. I've seen it in the military, and then the military goes in there, and it seems like it's a weapon for his personal grudges and shit more than it is, like, something to do with, like, he really cares about them.
Yeah, and I think that's why, from the entire convention, the entire Democratic convention, I think Obama delivered the best line of anybody when he said that, when he was talking about Trump and somebody being that thin-skinned and can get that offended by, are that riled up by a tweet? Like, do you really trust somebody like that with the nuclear weapon? And I think that just goes to show by him talking about asking if we could use a nuclear weapon in a national security briefing. I mean, the guy's a loose cannon.
Just in terms of the nuclear weapons, I know I've brought it up several times, but it really scared the living shit out of me when they asked him about Saudi Arabia. They should absolutely have nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
And he said Saudi Arabia should absolutely have nuclear weapons. If Saudi Arabia... If the royal family got deposed tomorrow, you basically have the most radical government on earth in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
That's where most of it's come from in the first place. And the idea of them having nuclear weapons, I'm like, you thought Pakistan's scary? It would scare the hell out of me if they had nuclear weapons. But they said, should Japan have nuclear weapons? Sure. Should South Korea have nuclear weapons? Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
Japan and South Korea, that wouldn't be, like, really, I'd like less countries to have them instead of more. But Japan and South Korea would not be the end of the world. But when they asked him about Saudi Arabia, he said, absolutely they should, without even thinking about it. I thought, my God. And
it kind of only seems fair that Japan would have. we gave them two of ours.
I'm sure Japan could develop. I feel like there might be a lack of interest because I'm sure they could, they probably have the means to develop them if they wanted to. But there might be, I feel like they're just not interested because of their, you know, it was really terrifying. And I mean, and then they asked him about the nuclear triad. He didn't know what it was. Now he's talking about, why can't we use nuclear weapons? If we have them, why can't we use them? And you know, when he asked that, the reason he had to ask that three times is because the first time he asked it, some general probably was like, so like we were saying with the ISIS airfield, you know, like they probably tried to move on. And stuff. You know how it is when somebody says something really awkward, nobody wants to, like, they just kind of move on. I feel like that's probably exactly how it went down. And then some, I mean, it's probably like this Dr. Strangelove moment where the president's sitting in the room going like, hey, why can't we blow up this one? Hey, I'm gonna blow up this one. And they're all like, no, just pretend he's not talking to you, you know, like lower your head and don't talk to him. And then this is all in the course of a week. And then he also said maybe Russia can hack into Hillary's emails and find Hillary's emails and basically inviting a foreign government. Russia to find Hillary. I thought, you know, the second he said that, Republicans were like, is there no way we could kill this guy? Is there no assassin we could find to get rid of this clown? Because, I mean, Republicans are basically stuck in this 1980s Reagan Cold War era mindset. So they basically still think Russia is, in 2012, Mitt Romney said Russia was the biggest threat to America. He said Russia was the biggest enemy we've got. Obama made fun of him. So in a lot of ways, Republicans are more scared of Russia than we are. They're more scared of Vladimir Putin than we are. It can't make them feel good that they have a nominee who is so close to Vladimir Putin.
Yeah.
It's got to keep them up. And of course, the DNC email hack, where they released all those emails right before the convention just so Bernie's fucking idiot flock, I mean, like lambs to the slaughter, I mean, they knew exactly what they would do and go to the convention and raise hell about democracy and get rid of Debbie Wasserman Schultz. That came from Russia. Pretty much everybody agrees at this point. The fact that they basically want to ruin America from within, Russia's like whole goal has been, how can we get the worst president for the United States? How can we get some fool that like can basically ruin America from within its own borders? So the fact that they want Trump to be president over Hillary, that has to give Republicans pause.
Yeah, and not just Russia. Like, you laid off the case for Russia, but, you know, Trump's been talking about pulling out of NATO, like, not keeping our allies abroad, like, if they're refusing to, you know, pay their fair share or whatever. And the guy's talking about pulling troops out of South Korea, and North Korea endorsed him. Right after he announced that he may pull troops out of South Korea, North Korea, and like they endorsed Trump and said that he would be a great leader. So he has He has the endorsement of Russia and North Korea.
I remember when I saw that, I just hee-hawing, laughing or whatever, because these are countries, I mean, North Korea probably hates us worse than any other country on Earth for some reason. And the fact that they basically want America to be destroyed from within, this is their ultimate goal, is because they know that they couldn't beat us in a conventional war. They want us to destroy ourselves. It's so funny that, like, that would be the one endorsement you'd never want. And then here they come in being like, I think Trump would be a hell of a president, you know? When I saw that, like, I couldn't stop laughing because, I mean, I feel like any day now he's going to get the endorsement of ISIS or something, you know, like ISIS is going to come in there and be like, Trump would be a great leader. And then Al-Qaeda will be like, I'm Trump all the way. I just don't know how this doesn't give Republicans pause to be like, all the big boogeyman countries that they've been trying to scare us into a war. Bush wanted to go to war with North Korea. Mitt Romney thought Russia was the biggest threat to our, you know, stability. They've talked about the axis of evil. And Vladimir Putin is like, you know, this terrible guy. I just really wish I could get inside their heads and be like, what do you think about a man who's cozy with all these people you told us to be afraid of?
You mentioned something just now. Trump had another little, like, mistake this week when he talked about what he was talking about Russia, and he said that, like, when he becomes president, Russia will never go into the Ukraine, and it's like they're already there.
Like right before the Tim Kaine gave his speech, he goes, Tim Kaine has ruined New Jersey. Tim Kaine's never been to New Jersey. Like, I mean, he goes, when he was a mayor of New Jersey and the governor of New Jersey, and he was saying all this stuff about New Jersey. Tim Kaine's from Minnesota. And he's like the senator in Virginia now, with the governor of Virginia. I mean, he makes a lot of mistakes like this. A lot of mistakes like this. And I feel like, I don't know, you just feel like he's the kind of guy who could be like, blow up Iran, and they blow up Iran. I said ISIS. I didn't say Iran. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like, he misspeaks all the time. To get into it, can Trump win? I think there's basically, I think there's three ways he could win. Right now, I feel confident about Hillary. At this same period in 2012, I felt like it was a real horse race between Obama and Mitt Romney. In 2008, Mitt McCain was beating Obama at this point, and he only started losing once the economy tanked, and he chose Sarah Palin as a running mate, and Palin started to actually give, like, speeches and things like that.
Yeah.
At this point, McCain was beating Obama by not much less than Hillary is beating Trump right now. So it can definitely change. We've seen it change before.
Yeah.
Looking at the ways Trump can win, I think there's really only three things that would cause a Trump presidency, and they're all bad. You know, like none of it is like, oh, he does something so amazing that he becomes president. They're all bad things that would happen. Either the economy would crash, mm-hmm. and people would probably blame Obama and the Democrats for that. Hillary could be arrested, which is not going to fucking happen, but I mean, I know Republicans, Hillary's going to be arrested. Hillary could get in some more trouble in some kind of, I'm sure it'll be some bullshit, she forgot to tip a waiter at brunch, or she gave a lobbyist a coaster from the Clinton Foundation and didn't report it as income, you know, I mean, I'm sure it'll be something stupid.
Yeah.
But she could basically get in more trouble. And if they actually found a real scandal, like if Bill Clinton used Treasury bonds to pay for prostitutes or something, I'd be really afraid at what would happen. Because right now, all her scandals are nonsense. So you've got either a scandal, or you've got an economic meltdown, or a terrorist attack, I think is the third way to get Trump presidency. None of them are impossible. Well, I mean, the economy is stable, it has been stable, but it can melt down like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could get into a place where Goldman Sachs is bet their whole funds on the Olympics and then America loses. they could always melt down. What do you think? I mean, do you think there's a fourth way that he could become president?
No. I really, like, I'm going to be honest with you. I think he's banking on the third option. Like, I think he's really banking on a terrorist attack. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at everything he's been saying, when he's been talking about, and you'll notice, like, every time there's some type of incident, like, he is quick to jump on it. Like, I told you this was going on. I told you this was, you know, we've got a problem. We've got to stop it. If there was a legitimate attack, that would almost give him, I'm not going to say credibility, but he could use that and say, look, I've been yelling about this. I was right. Now you have to elect. I still think with all the other stuff he's been saying, like, people would still look at it and be like, nah, you may have been right, but I still don't trust you.
So it's kind of two different questions. What do you think is the most likely to happen, and what do you think would benefit him the most?
I think a terrorist attack would benefit him the most.
I think if the economy melted down, I think he could basically point to it and be like, oh, this is NAFTA, this is the trade policies, this is Democrats don't stand up to China, this is Democratic policies. They've had the White House for 8 years. Because at first I thought a meltdown wouldn't affect it because people, they would look at Trump and be like part of that corrupt system, but I think he could phrase it as, well, I'm a billionaire, I know all about the economy, I know all about finance, I know all about private I think he could frame it in a way that'd be like, I'm the only guy who can get us back on track and get the economy we need. I think an economic meltdown would basically, I think that would be the worst for Hillary, because I think that would basically let him come in as the guy that they trust with the economy and all this money stuff, economics, and a terrorist attack. It definitely plays into the fear that he's been creating, but I think people might look at it and be like, well, Hillary's Secretary of State and she's more, it's just so weird because at the Democratic convention, Bernie fans are saying Hillary's too much of a hawk. At the Republican convention, they're saying she's totally impotent when it comes to terrorism and she can't stand up to anybody. And it's just really strange. But I think somewhere in all that of Hillary being too soft on ISIS, which is what the Republicans say, and she being a big hawk, which is what Bernie people say, somewhere in that is the middle ground, which is if there was a terrorist attack, I think enough people could look at it and be like, well, Hillary is a little bit more hawkish than Obama. I think Trump definitely, you're right, I think he definitely wants there to be a terrorist attack, which is scary, but at the same, because he's probably looking at it like, well, 9/11 helped Bush, which a lot of people don't, they don't want to hear that, but it did. I mean, it totally helped him. I mean, before 9/11, we had that really close race in 2000 between Gore and Bush. I mean, it was like extremely close. A lot of people thought Bush stole the presidency. After 9/11, everybody rallied behind Bush. He could have never got a war in Iraq if 9/11 hadn't happened. Nobody would have And everybody said, no, I'm not going to do that. Helped Vladimir Putin when Putin was, like, trying to run to succeed Yeltsin, and then they had all these terrorist attacks that they say Putin himself was behind, the Muslim terrorists or whatever. So I think Trump can look at that and be like, wow, you know, Muslim terrorism, that's a really effective thing for hawks. I honestly believe that a lot of people would look at it and say, well, Hillary might still be better off than Trump. I think where she's the most vulnerable is just economics. And it's not because her economic policies are bad. They're not bad at all. And Clinton was actually great for the economy. Obama's been good for the economy. Hillary would be just as good. I just think that she's more vulnerable there, only because, like, her experience is not solely economic, and Trump's is. So I'm really more afraid of, like, a market crash or some kind of economic event. I think, honestly, if there's a big terrorist attack, I think Trump will definitely go up in the polls, and I think that the race will be closer than it would have been. But at their heart of hearts, I think people will be like, oh, we just get done with Iraq. We just get done with Afghanistan. We're not really done with Afghanistan, and we're not really done in the Middle East. And the last thing in the world we want to do is go get involved in some Syria quagmire and get, like, an entire army stuck over there. I mean, a lot of people are still in Alabama, where a lot of people joined the military. A lot of people are just barely getting over that. A lot of people lost kids, or their kids had PTSD, or they lost an arm or a leg or whatever. I think the last thing in the world America wants to do is go into another Middle Eastern war. And I think that President Trump may not be who they turn to if a terrorist attack happened, hopefully.
Maybe you're right. I think when you talk about an economic meltdown, I think that a lot of your bigger name Republicans may jump on board behind Trump. I think the Republican Party may start to fall in line a little bit more behind Trump if there is an economic meltdown. Whereas just looking strictly at his voter base right now, like, I don't think they pay attention to economics enough to really understand that.
This is a good segue. Let's talk about his voter base. And let's talk about who's drawn to Trump and where he's getting his support from.
Yeah.
I really see it as a couple of different groups. It's not really as diffuse as the Democratic Party. I mean, we've talked about it many times. Democrats have gay people, transgender people, Muslims, black people, Hispanic people. I mean, like, you go on and on. I mean, it's a coalition of different interests or whatever. With the Republicans, I think there's really only, like, a few kinds of people that are supporting Trump. But I think it's important to note that there are different types, because a lot of times, like, I saw somebody be like, well, when I see somebody with a Trump sticker, I know they're a racist, you know? And I was like, well, there's a good chance, but I don't think you can say that they're all just voting for him solely out of racism. There is definitely a racist element that's supporting Trump. I don't think anybody can really deny that. And it may be the biggest element. I don't know exactly how big or how small. I mean, we've seen a lot of Trump surrogates say a lot of stupid fucking things. I mean, now they're all saying, as we said, any Muslim that's against him is part of the Muslim Brotherhood. Any black person that protests him is going to kill a cop. I mean, on and on. And it's like, they see minorities as very dangerous. And it's,
Shockingly, I think that when you look at the religious right, like, I think that that's a pretty big block that for some reason is supporting Trump.
Yeah, it's interesting that they have really gotten behind him in a way that I think surprises everybody. It probably surprises Trump, honestly.
Yeah.
I don't think he expected the religious right to get behind him in this way. When you look at why is the religious right getting behind him, because the guy's been divorced twice.
Yeah.
He's not really strong on which is actually one thing I like about Trump. He's not very tough on gay marriage, which I also like about him. He's not.
Yeah.
Seemingly does not care at all about transgender bans. Most of the things I like about Trump, the social issues, I feel like they'd be opposite of him on that. So I think it has to come down to just, again, bigotry, where it comes down to just get rid of Muslims, you know, and I think that it's got to come down to, like, a religion. So there's different, so I think people look at it as all the same. They just look at Trump's fan base, they're all white, they're all ignorant, they're all the same, and they're not. With Democrats, it's like we may have overlapping interests, but some people might care way more about Black Lives Matter than they care about illegal immigrants. Somebody might care way more about illegal immigrants than they do gay marriage. Somebody might care way more about gay marriage than they do environmental rights. So we have overlapping interests, but they're not exactly the same. I mean, they're not totally lockstep, and that just because somebody... So just because somebody's black doesn't mean that they're not a homophobe. And just because somebody is gay doesn't mean that they give two shits about immigrant rights. So, I mean, there's some overlap. it's not all quite the same. But Trump's fan base, which is the polar inverse and opposite of the Democratic base, it's kind of the same thing, where so the Democrats are for all these groups, and some people might be in those groups, and that's why they're for them. The Republicans, some of them might hate Muslims, and they may not necessarily care that much about Mexicans. Some of them might hate Mexicans, and they don't care that much about Muslims. You get the anti-immigrant people, sometimes called xenophobic right, which would be like anti-Mexicans, let's build a wall, let's deport people. You've got the religious bigots, which would be more about who I don't think care that much about immigration, because a lot of immigrants that would come would be Catholic or whatever. So I think as long as somebody's Christian, I don't think they mind as much. You've got them more like on an anti-Muslim thing, an anti-gay thing. And then I think there's people that just maybe are sexist, and they kind of think that the idea of a woman president, they don't like it. People never say that, because Trump, his comments about Mexicans and Muslims are so out front that a lot of people have really downplayed the women thing, the woman thing. I feel like he's so offensive in so many different ways that it's almost gotten buried in there that Trump has had horrible relations with women. I mean, a lot of women just can't stand him. And a lot of women that know him personally say he's a sleaze, he's sleazy. I liked it at the Republican convention. Melania was like, nobody's more loyal than Donald Trump, his third wife, saying how loyal he is. He's a throwback to that era. I think if you're like an older man, Trump's probably a lot more appealing than he would be if you were a young woman. We know that for a fact. We've seen the poll numbers. Trump's poll numbers with young women are dismal. I mean, they are terrible. Single women, they're not great, because a lot of single women are like, oh, God, Trump is the guy who's still at the nightclub trying to pick me up, you know, the sugar daddy or whatever. So I feel like their experiences with Trump are really negative. It's like, oh, he's the boss at work that still thinks it's okay to sexually harass me. But then I think beyond just the prejudiced people, there are people that associate Trump with a feeling of success. And I think, as we talked about in the last podcast, you know, people call Trump a con man, which is true, but he's also a marketer. And if you can tell me the difference between a marketer and a con man, I can't tell you the difference. But, I mean, he's got that marketer's instinct for basically saying the Trump brand is success. You buy Trump. I know one time on The Apprentice, he tried to get a brand of Trump ice, which is ice cream. And he called it Trump ice. And it was going to be Trump ice, like it was some fucking nightclub or something. And it was some overpriced, shitty-looking ice cream. It looked like some ice cream that Haagen-Dazs would throw away. And he was like, yeah, it's the best ice cream you could ever get. And he goes, it's made right here in New York, because, you know, New York's synonymous with dairy farming. I thought, who wants ice cream from New York? Nobody's like, oh, give me some of that. You know, there's Trump ice cream. There's all of the different ways he's tried to brand his name. One of his most notorious campaign moments is when he gave that press conference next to a big table of steaks and said, Trump steaks. And he looked like a buffoon to people that were predisposed to think of him as a buffoon like me, but to a percentage of America out there that's just barely paying attention, because the people who vote in a presidential race are a little different than the people who vote in, like, state representative or something like that. People who vote for president, it's the biggest election in America. You get the biggest voter turnout. It's still barely 50%, so it's not great. But you get a lot of people there who are just barely paying attention to politics. And they're kind of zoned out, and they're not really paying attention. And if you're just flipping through channels, and you see Trump, and you see a table of steak, in your mind, it's like, Trump's a nice, juicy steak. You know, he's a winner. Yeah. We're going to eat steak for dinner. So I think there's a type of person that may not care about Muslims, may not care about Mexicans, may not care about sexism. I think there's a type of person that is supporting Trump solely because they think he can make them successful. He's the path to prosperity. And I think that is a demographic that's there. I think people think all Trump fans are prejudiced, and some of them definitely are. They definitely are. Probably most of them are. But I've talked to a few people that really believe, people that work in McDonald's or Walmart or something like that. And this is why Bernie was so dangerous. This is why I really wish Bernie never run, because he kind of branded Hillary as this corporate oligarch who doesn't care about you and doesn't want you to have increasing benefits or wages, and she's for Wall Street and all this stuff. And it allowed Trump to kind of come in there as a little bit different kind of Republican. A lot of people look at him as differently than they did Romney. They thought Romney was a cold, soulless. Trump is just populist enough that he can convince people that, I know somebody that works at a restaurant or whatever, they're not very wealthy, they're not going to go to college. They know that things have not gone really well for them, but they see Trump as like, oh, he can make it right. He can get me rich. Something he can do can help me out. I mean, maybe you call them Joe the Plumber, not people or whatever, but they see it as the path to prosperity. And so he's fooling people in that way, I think. And then that may be a bigger demographic than people realize until it's too late. That's the demographic that's the wild card to me, is the people that they're in debt or they're struggling or they don't make that much money and they see Trump as a way out of that.
Yeah. These are some of the Trump supporters that I've come into contact with. And it's like these people that are with Trump's tax plan. And they're like, oh, well, right now I'm in this tax bracket, but you know, under a Trump presidency, my taxes are going to be cut like this much, and I'm going to get so much money back out of each check and all of this. And I'm like, that is great. Like I'm excited for you. But at the same time, our country's going to go bankrupt, and you guys scream about the national debt, and he's just going to literally explode it by doing that. So
blow a hole at both ends. It would seem, I mean, it would be like the Titanic of budgets. I mean, it would blow a hole in our economy. People have different images of Trump. So some people see him as like this 1984 Orwellian figure. Every time I picture Trump, I just see him as like this goon up on stage being like, oh my God, the economy's tanking, and his hair's flying everywhere. And he's just like this stupid comical figure who he's like I picture him as like trying to dump Mike Pence the day before the nomination was announced. I'm like, oh my God, I'm in a shotgun marriage with Mike Pence. What do we do or whatever? And he's out there, and then some homeless guy leers at his Melania too long. He's like, get that fucking hobo out of here. And he's starting bullshit with everybody. I mean, I just see him. Like if he had a sitcom, I would watch it because he's an idiot. You know, like he's just such a buffoon. I would definitely watch a Trump sitcom. He reminds me a little bit of Kenny Powers from Eastbound and Down. I mean, he's got a little bit of that like just dumbass, like go for broke energy. And he's very entertaining and likable in that way that people like Homer Simpson. But every time I think of him really sitting down and making a tax plan, I just can't really picture him. It just seems like a totally different role for him in society than what, like, I just don't. I mean, when we watch The Simpsons, we see Homer become president in one episode, and then things go back to normal. We don't really want to see Trump become president. You know, like, we don't want to see him, have unlimited power and, like, the treasury behind him and all this stuff. I just can't. Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, a lot of liberals think he's a neo-fascist and Hitler, and I just see him as more of a buffoon, and, you know, some conservatives see him as a path to prosperity and all this, but I don't know. It's kind of interesting that opinions really diverge on him. But, when they talk about his tax plan and how it would save them all this money, and I'm just like, to save that much money out of the tax budget would basically mean schools would no longer be funded, hospitals would not, you lose it all back. Like, if you really have to pay for private tuition for your kids, and you really have to pay for more hospital services, and you really have to basically pay a toll to fund the roads because the roads are privatized, you lose all that money back that you're getting out of taxes, and probably losing a lot more than that. As we've talked about before, you know, people complain and bitch and moan about the government, but when they bring in the contractors and the private companies to do government work, that's when things get really expensive.
Yeah.
A lot more expensive. So I don't think people really even look at it that way. And then Trump's always talking about cutting the deficit, cutting the debt. If you really cut government debt the way he's talking about, you're going to push it on to the individual. That's what Republicans they never say that. When they talk about cutting the deficit, the government debt, to cut it the way that they're talking about is to basically push that onto the individual, because if they cut Pell Grants, guess what? Now you're paying for your college.
Yeah.
If they cut Medicaid, now you're paying for your health insurance. If they cut any type of subsidies for schools or whatever, now you're paying all that money. If they cut out WIC, you're buying your milk. So when they talk about lowering the debt that way and the way that they care about, that's just an increase to you, the person. That's putting more of that burden on you. But I think the people that really believe he'd be a path to prosperity, they would be the most disappointed, because the people that want him for racist reasons and sexist reasons and xenophobic reasons, for them, I think it would be enough just that they had a white male president and just that they had one that agrees with them. So for them, I think even if he doesn't get the wall done, it's enough that they have a president that they think agrees with them. I think that they would be somewhat okay with the Trump presidency, no matter what he does or doesn't do. But the path to prosperity people, now they're going to be the really bitter ones, because he's not going to deliver any of this stuff, and I think they're going to be the most disillusioned, because they're also the ones who really need help. I mean, they're actually turning to him for a real, not an imaginary problem, but a real problem. And it's sad that they're turning to him instead of Hillary, when Hillary right now is the only one talking about a high minimum wage, the only one talking about how mothers should have more of their cost staff used by the government. She's got real plans to relieve student debt and make college more affordable. She's got real plans for daycare and home care that would be more affordable. I mean, the things that they want, that they think Trump can provide, Hillary's more likely to actually do. And they're not going to find that out until it's too late.
With Trump talking, we were talking about his tax plan, just looking at his tax plan, he's not going to have money to do all of those things. Flat out, he's not going to have the money to do all of these things that they're wanting.
Right now, I could just see Trump coming in there and being like, no, 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 no. All we got to do is, and he just pitches some pyramid scheme. It's not my friend Bernie Madoff told me.
Yeah.
And he just got some. We're going to get people in Brazil to buy Trump bonds that we're going to sell to the government, and he's got some elaborate. I just always laugh at him whenever I see him come out there on stage, and he just always looks like, I just really picture him as like, the wind blowing up his hair, or him farting loudly and he can't control. I mean, I just always picture like something going wrong and he's like the comic everyman hero, but it's probably dangerous to think of him that way. But right now, closing thoughts, I mean, what Trump can, he can win. I don't think he will. Things could change between now and then. We'll give you our final predictions when it comes time. But right now, I'd say she's got a better than decent chance. I'd say she's probably got about 75-80% chance of winning at this rate.
Yeah, before you even threw yours out, I was actually sitting here thinking to myself, 80%.
Yeah.
He does have a chance. I threw out some states earlier that, you know, if he could pull out, and I think those are the states that he would really be focused on, and those are the states that, you know, are going to determine the election. They're all in Hillary's favor right now. So
the most interesting thing, though, is the states that have Republican governors that he would need, like Scott Walker in Wisconsin and John Kasich in Ohio. He would really need, like, Scott Walker and John Kasich to deliver victories in those states, and they're not going to lift a finger to help him. I really believe that they're not going to help him. And so it just goes to show you that, I mean, relationships really do matter. I mean, in politics, it's very hard. It's just very hard for one man to win the presidency, because without Wisconsin or Ohio, there's no way he can win. And I don't see the governors of those Republican states lifting a finger to help their nominee.
Yeah.
Just goes to show Hillary. I mean, she has the whole Democratic Party behind her, and she's going to have the whole Democratic Party behind her. And I just, right now, I'd rather be her than him.
Yeah. I mean, John Kasich had the Republican convention in his home state, and he didn't even go to it.
That can't help but be interpreted a certain way. There's no way you can interpret. That seems like a pretty clear sign to me. But, I mean, Trump has got seemingly the military behind him. Seemingly. That may change. But Hillary has, as I said, pretty much every minority in America, women, single women, people that are young are behind Hillary. The media is behind Hillary. Most of the Republican establishment is behind Hillary. And even some of the really big Republican donors, some of Jeb Bush's donors have gotten behind Hillary. Even businesses behind Hillary. I mean, to have a Republican, people say, oh, a Republican presidential candidate, they don't need the Republican Party. But they do need business support. You've never had a winning Republican president, not in the last 50 years or so, that hasn't had business behind them, and Trump doesn't have business behind him. So I think that's the real death knell. The fact that business is not behind him, I think, is the biggest problem for him, really.
And that's the one group, I think, that a lot of people thought he would have.
Yeah. I thought so. I thought they would get behind a billionaire president. I thought that they would see him as one of them or whatever. And the fact that they think, well, Trump is more sympathetic to us than Hillary is. Like, he's one of us, and he has all of our stupid old billionaire problems. I mean, taxes and all these things he's complaining about. So he's got all of all these problems. But the fact that they really believe America would lose so much money if he were president, that they're getting behind Hillary, God, that speaks volumes. Like, I just think that Republicans are like, Trump is one of us. He is a white male billionaire who's in his 60s, and we're going for Hillary because we truly believe he'd wreck the economy. Like, that speaks so loudly. Michael, what's your web address for us?
It is blueinalabama.com.
And of course, you can find me at alabamaliberal.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. Join us for episode 31 coming up.